So the talk tonight is
about authenticity and what the Buddha called independence. Atmai. And it's very much in the category of equipment that we need for the journey. And it's really that we make a choice all the time. We either believe in and are entirely wrapped in the values of ordinary mind, which we would call worldly values and concepts. Worldly is the conditioned world, arati. Or we decide that that's not enough, that's not the total thing itself, that there is another place, or there is, like the Buddha said, an island. And so as we grow in wisdom, we keep choosing the place that is not the one of worldly values and beliefs, which is of the conditioned reality that we receive. And as we do that, we discover that the world that everyone agrees on in the society or in human culture, the world that is called the world, that seems to be an agreement, is not a thing, but an experience that we experience, and therefore is not fixed at all. The world isn't a thing, a fact, it's an experience. And as we go there, we don't need any more to believe in the worldly values or decisions or concepts. And that means human society says the A, B, C, D, E. You have to believe in money, football, politics, whatever, and read every morning Israel Today. And so, but the start of that ability to question worldly values and move our gaze to somewhere else needs independence of mind. And that's why I want to start this course with that independent of mind. That means we do not need to believe in everything we are told. We do not need to have authority of other people to tell us what the truth is. The authenticity is a crucial first step in all of this. That is why the Kalama Sutta is given a huge weight in the Dharma teaching. And the Kalama Sutta said basically, don't believe in things because everyone tells you. Don't believe in just because the old books tell you. Don't believe it because Israel Hayom newspaper tells you. Or don't believe because the old men and women tell you. Or because large numbers of people say the same thing. But if you look and see that something is beneficial, reducing suffering, greed, hate, and delusion, in other words, the test that is beneficial and helpful, and it's something that wise people would approve of, then go for it. That's the Kalama Sutta. I'll read it in a minute, the actual text. But it's worth being aware that the reason we believe what other people say is because we're fundamentally vulnerable. We depend on others because we feel naked, vulnerable, without a skin, suffering, not sure, confused, a bit helpless, and where am I? What's the truth? What is my story? So it's fundamental. If we take away, we strip off, I'm Israeli, I'm this, I'm that, I'm educated like this, I have this culture, I have this language, I have this. Imagine we stripped it all off, what would be left? We'd feel very vulnerable. So that the framework is for us a protection. And that's why we keep looking to know what to believe in. What is the story that I need to believe in? And the Buddha said, stop that search or hunt for something to believe in. Instead of that, find the authenticity in your own experience of things as they really are to you right now. It's a big, big source of suffering, of course, because the belief is the main source of wars and killing and so on. The belief that they're the enemy, belief we need to protect ourselves against them, views are given a very big status in the Dharma and I think in our life because they're so toxic very often. Views are tremendously toxic. If you have a strong view, you can kill very easily. No problem. Strong view that they are attacking me. If I don't kill them, they'll kill me first. All sorts of views. They're destroying the, you know, my favorite example of that because of the 60s is the Vietnam War because it's so clear that it was fought because of a view and 3 million Vietnamese villagers basically were killed by American bombs and so on, Americans, because of a view that if we don't kill them, they're going to somehow take over America, these Vietnamese peasants. And you can actually really feel the absurdity of a view in a case like that. The Americans were killing in the name of a view called freedom. That was the slogan of the 60s, you know, American war in Vietnam, fought for freedom. If we don't kill them, somehow they will take away our freedom. So it's view, which is, you know, clearly unhelpful, to say the least. And the image not that you know probably, but the image of these strong views and beliefs is really like a blind man leading a whole other group of blind men. The blind man leads them and they don't know where they're going. And it was interesting, I was in a monastery, in England. I spent a couple of weeks on personal retreat in a monastery, in a, Buddhist monastery. And I met, one or two young Israelis there, actually. And we had some very interesting discussions. And it suddenly occurred to me that in my own history, I went through the 60s, which was really, really a culture of stopping not believing. That it was a revolutionary culture where we decided we just didn't want to believe anymore the old slogans and beliefs of the previous generation, which affected sexuality, it affected culture, it affected language, it affected consciousness. Everything, we stripped it, kept opening it. And I suddenly felt sad that somehow today in Israel, young people maybe don't know how to rebel. That they've forgotten how sweet it is to rebel. But rebel right. You know, rebel, do a rebellion from the inside for freedom, for inner freedom. Taking off the, like a skin of a snake of the old culture that makes you believe in it. And how difficult it is in Israel for young people to, there's more insecurity. We maybe had the luxury we could do that at that time, but more difficult today. So it's really important to question authority. We just had a retreat with Krishnamurti in Kleel, and it's beautiful to listen to him where he goes all the way and said, don't believe in any authority. Question, inquire. Don't try and be comfortable in any truth, second-hand truth, sukbet, passed on truths. Don't look for comfort. Stay uncomfortable and open, vulnerable and open. And he was saying that, Krishnamurti, and of course the Buddha was saying exactly the same. So in the Kalama Sutta, I just wanted to read it, and I think I sent it around. I'm not sure if I did or not. Maybe. I did? Oh, okay, so it's on its way. It's on its way. But the interesting thing about the Kalama Sutta, it's sometimes called the Charter, the Amana, is it, of free inquiry. Now, what happened was there was a group of the Kalamas, a tribe, who kept getting all kinds of gurus telling them, believe in me, believe in me, believe in me. Gurus, Brahmins, and old men. And they all came to the Buddha and said, how do we choose? And he said, the Buddha said, it's very important for you, it's proper for you, Kalamas, to doubt, to be uncertain. Uncertainty has arisen in you about what is not sure, and that's good. And now, Kalamas, do not go upon what has been inquired by repeated hearing, you hear it again and again, nor because of tradition, nor because rumor, everyone seems to be saying it, nor upon what is in the holy books, nor upon surmise, surmise would be hypotheses or thoughts about things, nor upon axioms, like scientific axioms, nor upon what seems to be reasoning, hegioni, yeah, nor upon a bias, a prejudice towards an idea that other people talk about, nor upon someone else's apparent ability to do magic, don't know, to be charismatic, nor upon the thought, he's a teacher. Kalamas, when you yourselves know these things are not helpful, these things lead to blame, these things the wise do not agree with and undertake and observe, these things will lead to harm for you and others, then abandon them. And then the same again, he says, if they lead to greed, hate and delusion, abandon them. But if these things are good, these things are not blamable, these things are praised by the wise, then undertake and observe, these things lead to benefit and happiness, then enter and stay with them. So, I don't think you can take it too far, because we also have a sense that today in the Western world, we really value the individual and individual inquiry and reading a lot of books and thinking it out yourself. It's okay. It's in the school system as well. I was taught in university in Oxford to criticize everything. That was what we learned, is how to criticize. And so there is a little bit of a role here not to take it to the Kalama Sutta. Don't take that as the ultimate truth either. You know, be careful a little bit, because otherwise, you can go in circles, being quite lost. Because at the end, it does say, when you find something that the wise would agree, that is helpful to others, that is good and makes benefit to you and to others, then go for it. So, go for it means trust it. So, there is trust there, and it's important that you take the last sentence as well. Otherwise, we don't trust anything. And trust is needed, is one of the powers. We're going to be talking about that later. So trust is needed. But based on the sense that I don't want to take automatic authority from anybody. But it goes a lot deeper than this. Because when the Buddha talked about independence and being, and it's in the Satipatthana Sutta, and it's in our own meditation experience. We sit down, we wrap ourselves in a shawl, or we sit in a corner, and we begin to go inside and feel ourselves somewhat not influenced by things. Kind of, there's a sense that we enter a space which is actually more free from influence, from the chatter of the world, from the conditioning. Okay, we're hearing all the voices inside us. That's still the world and it's still the conditioning. But there is a certain independence that we wrap ourselves, we step aside. And the Buddha took it a lot further and asked, when we're independent, we can then ask ourselves, what do I really know? And that begins to be a really important question. What is it that I really know? And it's a very difficult question, because you could say, well, my thoughts are mine. But they're not. They're all the things that have happened to you, and you're the same worldly, the same blah 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 of the society, the parents, their school, this, that makes our thoughts. So we're actually repeating what we've got, what we've received. So when you ask, what do I really know? We're often faced with second-hand stuff from others, and that's being repeated in our own mind. So it's a very important question. It's the basis of Zen practice, for example. The Zen take it to the end. It's not so much the basis of Theravada Dharma practice or Vipassana practice as the center, but it's in the same direction. Vipassana would say, look deeply, clearly, carefully, and independently. And the Buddha said at the beginning of the Satipatthana Sutta, which is the guide to Vipassana, he said, independence, leave off craving and hunger for the world, and sit independent, free actually, here, like, not hanging on or hungering for the world and others. And there is the beginning of some real authenticity and honesty. Honesty is in that, it's one of the paramis, it's in here. I think authenticity is a good word, but also honesty. And it goes very deep. What do I really know? What is really happening right now? What is my genuine, honest, authentic experience right now? And it leads you very far. Because like Krishnamurti said, you know, when he threw off authority, and he says it again and again and again, don't take anything on authority. Authority, autorita. Leave authority, because it is like covers the truth. And he did, of course, in a very extreme way. He threw off all the system that created him as a world teacher, Krishnamurti. And the Buddha too. The Buddha spent years, 6-7 years, and it was about searching for what's genuine, what I really know, what is genuinely happening in this moment. Partly when we do that, we see that how much we're influenced. As soon as we begin to look authentically at our mind, we see how much is actually not our mind, but is everybody else's mind. But that's authentic. That's okay. We see how much we wear masks, masachot. We see how much we are dancing to other people's music. We see how much we are influenced and conditioned. And there we need courage to be independent. We need to feel, we need some courage. Because we can feel lonely, we can feel a bit cut off or against or isolated. We need to take some risks for the spiritual journey. And this is kind of one of the risks we take, which is to say, yeah, I'm going to go on my journey, I'm going to go it alone. And all of you, I think, have felt it at times, this sense, I have to go alone, I can't stay in this job anymore. I'm looking at actually more than one of you that I know about. I can't keep going anymore in this dance. I can't keep dancing to other people's music. I'm not ready to do that. My authentic voice is telling me, go, is telling me, change, is telling me, and that's on the level of action or of life or of lifestyle. But it's also on a very deep level in the moment. I'm not dancing anymore to other people's music in this moment. So it's not only just how you live, it's also in the very act of seeing your own mind that this independence is needed and this courage is needed. And courage to be alone, and courage to do it yourself, and courage to in a way to trust that what you are is enough. You will have enough. You are able to do this thing. It needs that courage, it needs that confidence and one of the things that you throw out in an authentic look at the present moment or at your own mind or at your own being is too much interest in what you gain and what will come out of it. The ordinary worldly thinking will all the time ask you, how good is it good for you? How what are you going to get out of it? Is a kind of ordinary thinking. The Dharma thinking is, what's the truth of this moment? What's the truth of my being? It's a different way of doing things. And so, in authenticity, gain and loss have less interest. You're much more interested in authenticity. What's really happening? What is the potential of this moment of my life? There's a different view of what am I going to get in now from doing this meditation, from going to this course Mami Kim in Tel Aviv. What am I going to get for it? It's another way of looking at things. So one of the places where we need courage, and here is an equipment, if you like, equipment of the mind, tiud, is not knowing. Not knowing. It's more right brain. So immediately I look at Aviva, I think of brain. So you're right in front of me, so I immediately jumped in my mind, right brain, which is the not knowing brain, shall we say, the side of the brain, which was not knowing the details, the facts, the certainty of the known world with its boundaries and definitions and descriptions, and not having to need to have views. I remember when I was a kid, it was really funny. I grew up a little bit different from other kids at the time, because I was very much I was full of imagination and dreamy and on my own a lot. And I kept going to school and everybody was really interested in football. And I wasn't the least bit interested in football. I had no interest at all in football. But in the end, but I was the only one in the class, I think the only guy. I was in a boys' school. Everybody had their football team and I didn't have one. And eventually I felt I really couldn't cope with that anymore. So I looked in all the list of football teams in England. And I chose the one with the nicest name. And it was called Wolverhampton Wanderers. And I really liked that name. Wolverhampton, which is a town in England. Wanderers, but the Wanderer, you know, that was the name of them. So it was such a beautiful name. I said, that'll be. And then I came to school, I bought a scarf with the colours, and I went, oh, I've got my Wolverhampton, I want them to win, and so on. And it's such a game, and it was so not true, and it was so, it was just a sort of a atsaga, total atsaga, based on klum, based on nothing. But that's how opinions are made, and that's how views are. We kind of suddenly say, wah, 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 and it comes from nothing. And so it, in a way, much more healthy to stay not knowing, to allow not knowing to be our friend and not our enemy. Iyadiya. To allow it to be a friend of ours. To allow it to be our partner in life and not an enemy that we want to shut down and close, and because it makes us uncomfortable. We need to question every fact, so-called fact. And the biggest fact, uvda, that we need to question is, who is it, who is me? What is this me? It's assumed to be a fact. If you go in the street, every single person would say, if you say, do you exist? They say, it is a fact. I'm here. I'm me. I can't, it's a fact that I'm existing as me. No, nobody, a small child will say it when they learn after the age of one. They will say, it's a fact. I am here. I am me here. There is a me here. It's a fact. The Dharma doesn't invite you to question that completely. And if you question that, you're questioning everything. Because if you question the subject, you also question the object. And if you question the subject and the object, what do you have left? Emptiness. So, you know, authenticity goes a long way. And it starts with this sense of independence. It's a feeling. We have to be a bit careful of what I would call intellectual Buddhism. We have to be a bit careful about concepts of Buddhism, because it's very, very attractive and very tiring. And I can tell you, as a teacher, the most tiring part of teaching is intellectual Buddhism, because everything seems to be clever and known and understood and so on, and some things, and it's not it, and it takes energy away from the something which is kind of not packaged in nice packages called the known. And so we have to be a bit careful when we're talking about the Kalama Sutta, inquiry. We have to be a bit careful when we're talking about authenticity, of the ability to question, the ability to doubt, to have doubt. All of these things are very important. Unknown. Not to kind of fall into a kind of a thinking about these things. It's more of a feeling of not knowing, or a feeling, or a feeling of being not swept away by other people, by the herd, ha'eder, by, like the Kalama Sutta said, what other people say, even the old people, even the books, even this. So easy. You go in the street and all the people, you know, you talk to religious people and they will give you a mishpat from the Tanakh as if it's the total truth about everything. I mean, you can't argue with that. And you have to be quite strong to say, yeah, but it's a mishpat in an old book. Okay, that's fine. It's got a truth in it. There's a lot of beautiful things in Tanakh. Beautiful things. Very, you know, amazing, amazing beauty in the Song of Songs and in the Tehillim. Amazing. And the wisdom in Eov and so on. Amazing things. But you can't, you believe it because it comes from a book, a sentence as ultimate truth, and use it and then kill people for it and don't know, make harm. So it's very, you have to be very careful about all of this. And there's a something about the innocence or the child, to be like a child a little bit, to be innocent, to ask the question, like a child ask a question, what is going on? It's a very, very okay question. What the hell's going on? What's happening, actually? What am I experiencing? What are you experiencing? It's a good, it's fine to, you know, to be there in, like this, with that innocent place of not knowing. Because it's that same place where you look at a thought that troubles you for in meditation. For example, judgmental thought that keeps coming back. And you ask, who are you exactly? What are you exactly? And from there, he collapses, this so-called thought. This thought depends on your belief in it. Any thought, it depends on your belief in it. If you don't believe it, if you ask the right, if you look at it straight in the eyes, the thought begins to collapse. It can't stand. I'll take questions in a minute. So a lot of what we're doing with this being independent, being authentic, is pulling the carpet, kezelim shocheta shatiach, from under all the belief systems and under the known and under the, and that's why the path is radical. And that's why you're not, you know, it's much easier to worship golden Buddhas in, than to come to Course Mami Kim and hear this and pull the shatiach from under our belief, our known world. Krishnamurti said, truth is a pathless land. It has no path because it blows away the concepts, it pushes away, the concepts about life are blown away. So we're not sure what the path is, we're not sure, we can't be sure. One of the Krishnamurti followers, someone I got to know when I was in India at the Krishnamurti Center there, I was teaching Krishnamurti school for a year, and one of the, this very famous quote of Krishnamurti that said, truth is a pathless land, and he said, how do you travel the pathless land? There's only one way, you have to get lost. Just get lost. So, there's a lot of images in the Dharma about letting go of this shore. How do you say this shore in Hebrew? Just so that people don't. Agadah Hazot. To actually let go, to launch yourself into the river, to let go of this shore, Agadah Hazot Po, that means a safe place. So don't forget, we are all going on the same journey of the Buddha, from his castle of safety and comfort. We're all following this mythological journey to a place of less comfort, to a place of less known, to a place that needs our authentic discovery of truth. And when we discover truth, it's not really us that discover it. It's the truth that discovers us. It's a little bit, this is one of the paradoxes. If we think we know, then we're still in charge. But the truth doesn't care about us. The truth is out there. The truth, you know, it owns us. We don't own the truth. So as we let go of a whole system of thinking and beliefs and so on, we give more possibility for the truth to take us. It's not emptiness is a thing that we need. It's that emptiness gives a possibility for the truth to take us over, to own us, to take us away. And all the knowing and the known and the I know and I believe and so on is as if we own the truth. But it doesn't matter actually whether you listen to the Buddha or listen to Krishnamurti or listen to any authentic spiritual teacher from Jesus onwards. It's the truth that owns us. We don't own the truth. So we have to get out of that illusion. And And it's a first step, if you like, is keep on being authentic about what do I really know and what am I doing with that? What is my truth right now? We have to allow what seems to be real to be questioned. It's Maya. What seems to be real is Maya. Maya is illusion. So what seems to be real, this earth, this worldly belief, this worldly consensus, is Maya, is illusion. And the first step, and that's why it's an equipment of the for our journey, is to question Maya, what seems to be known, what seems to be real, including me, that seems to be real. So I want, just to finish, I want to quote T.S. Eliot, because he's in language, he's so beautiful. I mean, he goes as far as pretty well you can go in language. And he said himself, 20 years I've tried to use language to raid the truth. It's a raid to invade the truth. And I'm constantly trying and constantly failing. And but he says, "You say I'm repeating something I have said before. I shall say it again. Shall I say it again? In order to arrive there, to arrive where you are, to get from where you are not, you must go by a way wherein there is no ecstasy. In order to arrive at what you do not know, you must go by a way which is the way of ignorance. In order to possess what you do not possess, you must go by the way of dispossession, of not having anything. In order to arrive at what you are not, you must go through the way in which you are not. And what you do not know is the only thing you know. And what you own is what you do not own. And where you are is where you are not." So let's just take one moment to feel that.